Coming up today, our favourite stories from 2017 as we bid farewell to a tumultuous nightmare of a year. You're listening to episode 349 of the WiredUK podcast, your weekly guide to the best of science, tech, ideas, business and design. I'm your host, James Templeton, and joining me are Matt Burgess.
Hello.
Sian Bradley.
Hello.
And Matt Reynolds.
Hello.
We're all in the cupboard this week for the final podcast of 2017. Boy, what a year it's been.
It's been emotional.
It's been emotional. This podcast recording is all that stands between Matt Burgess and his Christmas shopping.
Haven't left it to the last minute at all.
Not at all. Luckily, Wired headquarters is based on Oxford Street in London, the UK's busiest and most hellish of shopping streets. Enjoy that, Matt.
Oh, no.
Yes, so we will be looking back on 2017 throughout this podcast. So if it's been an absolute waking horror for you, then maybe fast forward to the end when there'll be some fun stuff. But let's start off, as we always do, with facts. Who would like to go first? Speak.
I will.
Go on, Matt.
So this is from Velcro. So the company behind Velcro, they're called Velcro Brand.
Nice.
They're currently trying a viral marketing campaign to stop people saying Velcro, because Velcro's a brand name, don't you know? And actually, the technology is called Hook and Loop.
Ah, the old Hook and Loop.
Yeah, so yeah. They're basically just really, really angry because there's all these kind of Velcro products and everyone's calling it Velcro, and actually they're not getting a cent for that. So
it's an outrage. This is a bit like when an awful lot of pedants pointed out that GIF should be said JIF.
Sorry, pedants.
Yeah, pedants. Yeah,
as in people who are pedantic.
Pedants.
Pedants. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Says the pedant.
That's brilliant, though. That's good irony.
Yeah, he pedantically points out. No, I apologise. We could record that over again, but we'll just leave it there for the record. Yeah, Velcro. Cool. I'm losing the will to live. Matt Burgess, what did you learn this week?
I learned this week that a branch of KFC in Japan has started to offer low-odour fried chicken. It's a pop-up branch at a subway, so people on the tube or trains or whatever they are, metros in Japan, don't eat a smelly chicken while they're commuting.
I'm going to try a follow-up fact without misspeaking. In Japan, an awful lot of people celebrate Christmas by eating KFC.
Maybe odourless KFC this year.
Maybe this year, yeah. Because obviously it's not really a thing in Japan. But if you do anything, then chances are you go out for a bucket of chicken. Google it. It's a weird story. Sian?
Yeah, so this has obviously been a very strange year. So I'll give you a very strange fact. So Tesco started only selling straight croissants last year because their customers find it easier to spread jam and other things that you might want to spread on a croissant on them.
This is an outrage.
And I checked Tesco's website today and they still look fairly straight to me. So I think it's still a thing. But there was actually a petition against this because somebody was really angry that it was an attack on French traditions. But it only got 10 signatures and then it was closed.
Well, if I had been aware of this outrage at the time, it would have had 11 signatures because this truly is a monstrous attack on French traditions. I learned, throughout this year, I learned that I am old. South Park, Spice World, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Teletubbies, Harry Potter, Men in Black, the Google.com domain name, Hanson's Mbop, all turned 20 in 2017.
That is worrying. Like, Sian's only 21.
There we go. There we go. Yeah,
you are nearly as old as the Google domain.
Wow. I mean, yeah, that's... Yeah, see, Harry Potter, I can... But I feel like I grew up with that more, so it's weird that I was...
I mean, it was around for a while.
Yeah.
It's still not quite gone away. I was surprised that Mbop was that old.
Yeah, that's South Park. That's...
Yeah, yeah. There we go. And a lot of them are still going. Wonderful. So, we said we're going to look back on 2017, and we're going to do it in a slightly oddball way. I've asked everyone to pick out their favourite story, person, event, occurrence, trend, what have you, of the year. So it's a bit of a vague brief, but we're going to see how we get on. Matt Reynolds, you can go first.
So, yeah, I don't know if you've heard of it, but artificial intelligence, that's been a thing this year. But obviously that's not news at all, right?
No.
But the reason why... I wanted to pick it my year, because I think 2017 was really the year that we learned that AI is way dumber than we give it credit for. So there's been loads of research projects, loads of news stories. They're actually about how many, you know, or how hard AI fails all the time. So just kind of run you through some examples from this year and some of them a bit earlier. So we know that machine learning algorithms, kind of image recognition algorithms, can't recognize you if you wear a certain type of glasses. They can trick you, or they can be tricked into thinking you are someone else. You can do stuff like change a pixel on an image, and the image recognition algorithm will think it's looking at an elephant when it's really looking at a sock. And we're talking about changing like one pixel in a way that is completely imperceptible to humans, or, you know, or a selection of pixels. There's even stuff like you can trick the type of image recognition that might be in driverless cars into thinking that a stop sign actually says go, and all kinds of stuff like that. And the reason I thought that this is kind of a particularly 2017 type of story, right, is because with the iPhone X and all this stuff, this is the first... Is it the iPhone 10?
I mean, yeah. Say whatever you want.
I know, I just felt like I've fallen into that trap that I was, you know...
You said it right.
I did it. Oh, right, cool.
I think. No, he said it wrong.
I think I said it wrong.
10.
Yeah. Oh, God, I've given up my ability to mock people that do it wrong. Yeah, so with all that stuff, I think that this is the year where we thought, oh, yeah, facial recognition is really kind of like a big thing. And I don't know if you guys remember earlier in the year, that was at Stanford paper about... that image recognition could detect your sexuality just from kind of analysing your photo. And I think that I wanted to kind of like gather together all these stories about how bad AI is, just kind of like remind us that actually maybe we shouldn't be trusting these machine learning algorithms in everything we do.
Right. There's a problem here, right? Some people in the office would argue that artificial intelligence Twitter, that is the part of Twitter where people talk a lot about artificial intelligence, is the worst. So there's an awful lot of very complicated research going on here, and an awful lot of the reporting around it either sensationalizes it or misinterprets it. So you end up with fairly earnest, hard work going on at companies and research organizations just being, well, not lied about, but stretched to breaking point.
Yeah, I mean, that's totally true. So I think that you saw this right with that Stanford paper, that everyone, there was loads of stories that were like, oh my God, AI's checking whether everyone's gay, and that, you know, they're going to do that in all kinds of states. And then the kind of inevitable backlash against that, which is, no, this is absolutely not possible, and actually this is a, you know, a terrible thing to do. And I think that, as with all of these things, probably the truth is like partway between, right? It's about being more aware that these things can be developed. And the thing is, yeah, I think what's interesting is that if something, even if, right, that, you know, that's not right, and or whatever, if someone can sell a product that they say looks at your face and works out X, oh my God, people are going to buy it. You know, we've seen the type of startups that get funding and all that stuff. Actually, the ability of an algorithm to do something isn't really necessarily correlated with, you know, how it will be kind of used. A good example is like the Met Police is trying to use an algorithm to try and like automatically detect like porn. You know, at the minute, it thinks that images of desert are porn.
Right.
You know, which is
similar sort of tones and shapes potentially.
Which is like fine, but it's when we're talking about putting these algorithms into use, and, you know, if it's a private company using CCTV, there's not necessarily any legal requirement for them to have an algorithm of a certain ability. So, it's worrying for that respect, but it doesn't mean that it's really good or it's really bad. It just means that, you know, we need to be asking a bit more questions about what's kind of going into all these things.
So you are pointing out to our listeners that artificial intelligence was a thing.
Yeah, it was a thing.
That happened on several occasions.
And it also wasn't that intelligent.
Yeah, it was, artificial, not intelligent.
There's another facet to this, and it's all about the black box, so to speak, of artificial intelligence. And there's been an awful lot more debate this year at government level, at board level of companies, about how we hold algorithms accountable, about how we're building bias into AI systems. And as you say, when that sort of bias starts getting built into nation states and companies contracted by them, the police, security services, that's really, really dangerous. So, and especially if the AI isn't as clever as we think it is.
Mm. Yeah, and that's kind of because obviously that's the really interesting area, isn't it? It's who are these people that are kind of trying to break open algorithms and trying to like test them? Sadly, it's a bit of a shame, really, because that's not really the research that gets people shouting and gets the kind of like angry headlines. And as a result, it's a from my experience of talking to AI researchers, it's a bit of a kind of like underfunded area of AI research, because there's so much money into image recognition and all these kind of things. But actually, the people that could really help us kind of refine these things, it's a bit uncool, isn't it, really, making these things actually worthwhile for humanity?
Yeah. Should we leave it there?
Yeah.
Should we delve further into the AI cesspit? Let us not. Our second story, trend, thing, person. Sian, in your notes you've put down space stuff and techno.
Yes. I'll get to that. So there have obviously been so many like awful and worrying and just really depressing things happen this year, as well as lots of really good, exciting things happening. But my favourite, I think, amongst all of that was like a relatively insignificant one. And I don't mean that it's not a great story. I mean, it wasn't one of the biggest things to happen. But the reason I like it is because it is related to space. And I feel like this was the year where people started to seriously talk about a future of moving to space, because we've destroyed everything down here, especially with Elon Musk and all of his SpaceX things and the space tourism talks and things like that. But the story that really interested me was just simply that astronomers were beaming music from Norway toward Leuten Star B, which is a habitable planet 7 trillion miles away. So, you know, it's pretty far. It's pretty far.
Yeah.
It's far, far, and there's... But when you actually get into the story, there's just so many, like, little nuggets of brilliance. So firstly, it didn't go to Proxima B, which is closer, because we didn't have a antenna big enough. So the one in Norway is, like, that couldn't get to Proxima because it's in the north.
So they made do with what they had.
Yeah, which was just... Yeah, that was quite wholesome as well. But it got really interesting when I realised that this musical package actually involves some techno. So it's by Nina Kravis, if you don't know her. She's just like a techno / house DJ. So it's just like 10 seconds of really alien-y, spacey techno that's going to be beamed across the galaxy.
To try and tell aliens what we're like.
Yes.
By sending them snippets of techno.
That we think may sound alien, so yeah. we don't know what these things are that are out there. If there's anything out there,
they'll love it.
We're sending them something that we think sounds like them. That's basically is that the equivalent of when people who are sort of ignorant tourists go to a foreign country and then sort of just like speak in their native tongue louder to people,
yeah. Yes.
When they can't understand. Sorry,
I suppose so.
Sorry for people for being loud.
Yeah,
this techno. Is what we think of you.
Sorry, carry on.
But yeah, that amused me like on a personal level, because I used to live with three techno DJs, so I had techno drive me mad most of the time.
It's
in my
very
personal life, and then it spilt into my professional life. So it was just a very techno year. But beyond the techno, it's also a really interesting story because it's actually really clever. So the transmission itself was obviously not just an MP3 that they'd just put in a package and sent up there. It was in binary code, which was a tutorial for these aliens, life out there, etc., which explains like what the sound waves are. And so the frequency and the length, the binary reflects the frequency and the length of the wave patterns. And if you're lost, like, don't worry, I was lost too, and my tiny brain still can't really sort of comprehend like how you can put a tutorial using numbers. I don't know. I'll leave that to the people that are cleverer than me. But that's also part of the fun, just being a bit confused, because that matched the tone of most of the year. So they sent the transmissions in October. They'll send more in April. And I just think it's really amusing to just imagine them like decoding some techno. And when I'm like really old, maybe we'll learn that they'll
send some techno
fans
back.
Yeah. And maybe they're better than us at techno. And then it'll just...
They'll turn up in 200 years demanding to hear more Nina Kravitz.
Yeah, exactly.
And be bitterly disappointed when they find out she's been dead.
Yeah, we'll have to give them something else.
Yeah. This is a bit like what they did with the two Voyager spacecrafts, right? The golden discs that they put on there that were our best attempt at summing up humanity, albeit that this is a slightly more esoteric version of that, sending aliens techno. But the point about the binary, right, is how can it ever be possible for... a planet where life develops completely independently from here, mm-hmm. that they'd have any notion of how to read our kind of information.
That's one of the ridiculous things. But it's probably better than sending a vinyl or something like that.
Well, yeah. I think they attached the player. The vinyl. There's like a little playing needle in Voyager. I might be misremembering, but yes, I mean, it had diagrams on it to explain where it had come from. So it had an address and it had a picture of some naked people on it. They're in interstellar space, so they're getting there.
It's nice that we think music is one of our best exports, and it is, obviously. But if you're going to sort of communicate with unknown beings, we can do it through the sound of techno or the Beatles or something.
Yeah, so Sian, you started your little segment by saying that it had been an overwhelmingly depressing year, but through the joy of techno, we might be heading for a more enlightened future with our alien friends 70 trillion miles away, if they ever hear it, or can hear, or even like techno, or know what it is. All right, my story. Oh, dearie me. So this year, Silicon Valley got really good at inventing things. And I wanted to remind us all of some of the wonderful things that Silicon Valley invented this year, starting with the helicopter. We all know what the helicopter is.
New to 2017?
Brand new in 2017 is the helicopter. So Uber this year announced it would launch a flying taxi service in Los Angeles by the year 2020. The concepts look just like a fancy kind of helicopter, which is brilliant.
That's the problem with all of these flying cars.
Yes, really. They are all helicopters or big drones.
It's groundbreaking, really.
It really is groundbreaking. So aside from being noisy and dangerous and generally a bit of a nightmare service that's only used by the hyper-rich, cities already have helicopters and helipads. And in some cities where congestion is really, really bad, in some cities in South America, even in New York, there are helicopter services that shift you around between the tops of buildings so you don't have to go down with all of the dirty poor people. So, I mean, it was nice to see Silicon Valley inventing the helicopter.
But it's not a helicopter. This is a helicopter with an app.
Oh, yes. Yes, it's a flying car coming to Los Angeles by the year 2020. Just don't expect it to look like one of the ones from Blade Runner. Shared flats? Anyone? We've all lived in them. Yes?
Still do.
There you go.
I'm an innovator.
Yeah, you are innovating. So WeWork is a co-working company that's valued at $18 billion. $18 billion. That's an insane amount of money. Its innovation is real estate and making real estate look very nice. So it's a space where you can go and work alongside like-minded people and eat lots of jelly beans. But the not-so-new idea of co-working has sparked the similar trend of co-living, which we covered in Wired magazine. Roland Manthorpe did a big in-depth feature on it where he went slightly mad by spending a week co-living in, I think it was Brooklyn. So co-living, I'll give you the pitch. Imagine if you could live with like-minded people in a nice house, in a nice place where simple things like cleaning were taken care of by someone, everything was included in one simple bill. Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Never heard of it before.
Yeah. You've lost me a bit.
No, it's shared housing. So yeah, they invented shared housing. But for people who work for startups and have a bit more money.
Oh, so it's like shared housing, but way, way worse because you hate everyone you live with.
Well, let's not get too down on the world that we cover. But yes, essentially, it's shared housing, but worse and more expensive. Buses. We also invented buses this year. I'm not sure if you've heard of the bus, but if you can imagine some sort of trolley that's pulled by horses, then remove the horses and replace it with an engine, that is a bus. We invented the bus all over again. So ride-hailing sharing companies have been trying to do this for years, and it's quite difficult because first you have to come up with the concept of the bus. So Uber's been playing around with it for a little while, but in 2017, Lyft launched Lyft Shuttle. Lyft Shuttle rides follow a set route with set stops, and you have to get off and walk to your final destination.
And there's no horses.
No horses at all. Uh-huh. I mean, you could get onto a horse to reach your final destination, and there's probably an app for that these days.
Imagine if you had a whole fleet of those, and then you differentiated between them with a number. I honestly don't think it'll catch on. So.
Well, in fact, Citymapper launched exactly that in London. It's a small-scale trial, but they're... And in fairness, I'm being cynical. I'm being a bit silly, but in London, the Citymapper service could potentially be quite useful because what they did was identified areas of the city where there were transport sort of holes, where there wasn't enough service to meet the demand, and they've sort of introduced more intelligence to the bus network. It's not going to replace buses. It's a bus. The vending machine. We also invented the vending machine. So imagine that shop that you go to that only stocks fizzy drinks and crisps and alcohol. Imagine taking that and turning it into a machine.
Ooh,
that would vend things to you. Yes, this year.
Blowing my mind.
I know. Silicon Valley invented the vending machine. Bodega, a company founded by two former Google employees, has a simple pitch, a cabinet from which you buy produce. To add insult to injury, if you're in America, you will know that the word bodega is the word commonly used for the sort of mom and pop stores that you get on the corners of streets in cities such as San Francisco. We call it in the UK a corner shop or an off license. Silicon Valley decided to not just potentially completely destroy the bodega business in America, but they named their company after it. Great ideas, guys. And finally, and this is the best one. I mean, it really is. So I suppose my story of 2017 is things that didn't need inventing. And the best one was Juicero. Juicero was a $400 internet-connected juicer that took inspiration from the slightly environmentally disastrous pod coffee machines that plague hotel rooms and homes across the world. So why not put your squeezed juice and vegetable things, fruit juice and vegetable things, in a pouch, put it in a machine, and then that machine uses the incredible strength of machines to press that pouch and give you a freshly squeezed, tasty vegetable fruit juice. It's a brilliant idea. The only problem with it was that some fine investigative journalism by Bloomberg revealed that it was a total scam, and the little sachets of juice were actually more effectively squeezed using your hands. And I'm not talking about, you know, when, you know, you really, really squeeze something as hard as you can. It's just like limply squeezing a bag of fruit. And it juices it.
But it's fine. It didn't raise any money at all.
Just $118.5 million in 5 months before someone bought one and went, lads, this is rubbish. So well done. We should say it's very easy to be sarcastic and get down on innovation. There's been an awful lot of positive stories of good innovation, of great work done this year. But it's always fun to poke a bit of... It's always fun to poke a bit of fun. Yeah, there we go. God, it really does need to end this year, doesn't it? Okay, fourth story, and then I have a quiz.
Yes.
I have a quiz. Fourth story, Matt Burgess. You've been relatively quiet so far, mainly because we only have three microphones for four people, so we're having to do a very intricate off-microphone juggling act. Matt, now is your time. Your story of the year.
It's a little bit... This microphone situation is a little bit like that game who's Twister. Twister, the one where you had to put your hands and feet in different places and sort of bend
apart from we're just sort of politely stepping out the way to let other people speak. But if you'd like to put your foot somewhere awkward, you can.
I'm going to do that probably with this story. my story of the year, or my thing of the year, company, person, it's a bit of all of them, is Amazon.
Never heard of it.
The company, not the patch of trees, which is shrinking in
Brilliant.
South America.
Brilliant.
I think it's been a big year for Amazon, and it's sort of gone a little bit unnoticed. Like, it is obviously considered one of the sort of big four or five tech companies that exist, but I think people look down on Amazon a little bit and they're like, oh, they're a bit rubbish. They're not...
They're just an online supermarket, aren't they?
Yeah, they're not the most exciting, but they've had a interesting and good year. Like, they obviously bought Whole Foods for $13.7 billion, and it's planning on using Whole Foods as sort of a development of its own food selling business, which it moved into a few years ago, like Amazon Fresh and products like that. And it's going to start to probably sell Whole Foods or give people who are Amazon Prime customers discounts in Whole Foods stores. It's been selling its products on Whole Foods products on Amazon for a little while now, and it's starting to make a lot of money from it, so it seems like it was a pretty decent business acquisition. And actually, there may be other things to it that we don't know yet. They could be setting up some sort of really complicated delivery system, which isn't complicated and uses their existing infrastructure.
They could use flying cars.
They could use flying cars. Amazon is obviously doing a lot of stuff with drones as well, and it started to test its like drone deliveries in a few places around the UK. No, it's just around Cambridgeshire, but like, it's very controlled trials.
Field in Cambridge.
They're still trying, and that's one of the things they're going to push. Jeff Bezos became the world's richest man. World's richest person, but I mean, men are... dominate the top of this list, so it's fair to say he became the world's richest man for a little while. They shouldn't dominate the top of this list.
There you go.
This,
now there, you're putting
now
your foot
my foot in
position.
It. Yeah. But he was just over worth just over 90 billion at one point, which was more than Bill Gates. So he's obviously had another good year.
He's done all right.
Amazon expanded its Echo range. Alexa voice assistant is, which we've talked about loads before, obviously, has been put into a lot more third-party products. So Amazon is getting a lot of data from a lot of other, from people using other people's products. So that was actually a very clever move that I don't think has been picked upon too much. It's like you've obviously got all these other companies wanting to bring out their smart speakers that can be in your homes and installing Alexa into these speakers or into their cars or into fridges. And it's actually all this data is going back to Amazon that it can use with its machine learning, and you can just see Jeff Bezos' eyes, like, with dollar signs appearing, more dollar signs appearing.
Dollar and data signs, whatever a data sign.
So that's why I think Amazon has had a very sort of interesting year.
Matt Burgess really likes Amazon.
I didn't say I liked it. I was just saying I think they've had a good year.
It's been significant. What fascinates me, and maybe that's too strong a word, but what's very interesting about Amazon, particularly from a point of view of covering the technology industry, is the amount of hype that's around Facebook and Google and Snapchat and Apple. And when they, or Samsung, and when they announce a big new product or want to make a big song and dance about stuff, it's huge news. And on the back end of stuff, we see an awful lot of people wanting to read that. Amazon, less so. It kind of goes a bit under the radar, like you said. So aside from the $13.7 billion deal for Whole Foods, it will bring out products, and it will bring out a lot of products. And no one really makes a big song and dance about them, partly because they look a bit rubbish, and they're not luxury. But what Amazon's doing is it's turning itself into a hardware and data company with a vast array of different devices and touch points with its customers. And pretty soon it's going to be the case that, well, definitely in America, that it's very difficult to live your life without being an Amazon customer, which is what Google successfully done without owning any infrastructure. And Amazon's doing it while owning things like Amazon Web Services. Now it owns a huge, huge food retailer. It's the main interface between humans and their homes in terms of Internet of Things and Alexa and voice control. So it's all of a sudden become huge. And it kind of sounds obvious, but you might not have considered it.
Yeah, and I think as well, another interesting point is that Amazon, unlike Google and unlike Facebook, doesn't rely on customers' personal information for its business. It basically involves you buying stuff, and that's pretty much it. It doesn't sell your data for adverts, and is a big advertising platform and things like that. So when we have potential like new privacy laws and things in the future, it's not going to be affected as much by them, because it's more of a hardware and services company than necessarily a business model that is based on advertising and revenues and stuff.
Yeah. Although there's a final point, and then we'll move on to the super fun quiz. One of the threats to Amazon's business model, aside from regulation in the European Union, is how it is able to do things so quickly. So every year around this time of year, there are an awful lot of stories about how hard Amazon works its staff, not just the staff in its corporate headquarters, and there's been some fairly nasty stories about that, but also its staff in distribution warehouses and the people it subcontracts, so that I can tap a button on my phone now and have that video game that I want in my home by the time I get there in 2 hours. It's a remarkable, remarkable feat of logistics. But at the moment, Amazon is able to do that very, very cheaply and with not necessarily the right kind of oversight. But slowly regulators and lawmakers are catching up. And that's going to have a big impact on your ability to get all that stuff without necessarily paying what you should for it.
Yeah, treat people well, give them employment rights, things like that.
Tis the season, right?
It's always the season.
Yes, yeah, particularly now. And when they're working their socks off to make sure that everyone has a merry, merry consumerist Christmas. Okay, a quiz, and then we'll leave you alone. How well do you remember 2017?
It's like it's today.
Yeah, like it's still going on.
That was a terrible attempt at a joke.
Yes,
I'm really sorry.
That was a joke? Jeez, okay. I have prepared 5 questions, randomly picking out facts from 2017. And you have to get the answers. Good luck. Question 1. Uber's sexist working culture was exposed in February. What was the name of the former Uber employee who wrote the viral blog post that kicked it all off?
I'm going to give you 2 a chance on this one and let you go first.
I'm going to go straight out there and say I don't remember her name, but I think it might be Sarah.
wrong. It's,
oh, what? Maybe, you know, it's, maybe. You definitely know it's not Sarah. Whoa. I, you know what?
Confidence.
I'm going with Sarah, no last name.
Hmm.
That just made me think of Sarah Lacey. That's just, I think I've read that today.
No.
Definitely. I am so bad at names in general, so this is just terrible.
Oh, Matt Burgess, knock it out the park.
Ooh, pressure now. Yep. Susan Fowler.
Bing. Oh. Yep, 1-0.
Oh, Sarah Susan.
Yeah, yeah. Sarah Lacey wrote a book about sexism in Silicon Valley. She's an entrepreneur and author. Question two. How much in back taxes is the European Commission demanding Apple pays to the Republic of Ireland in euro?
Ooh, in euro.
Matt Burgess, your turn to go first.
Okay, 13 billion.
5 billion.
I'm going to say 15 billion.
Matt Burgess. 2-0.
Oh, 13 exactly right.
Billion euro.
You can't, you can't even try and do the thing where you try and go a little bit higher. Try and like...
Just say what Matt Burgess says from here on in.
This might be the first quiz I've ever won. Not
well, you haven't won it yet. Oh, yeah, steady on. Steady on. You're never going to get this one. In April, Carter Wilkerson posed a question on Twitter that went on to become one of the year's most retweeted posts. What did he ask? Matt Burgess has just danced with joy because he knows the answer. But Sian, it's your turn to go first.
Oh, that's a lot of months ago.
I know this
for
one.
For my memory. Oh, I just can't. The smug face is too much. Just go. Just go.
No.
I found my true calling, but I'm going to wait.
Matt Reynolds, you now get a guess.
You know what? Because this sounds to me like... You say it was April this year, right? Because this sounds to me like it's a little bit like the gold or blue dress thing. But obviously it's not that, because that was actually a couple of years ago. I honestly, I hate Matt Burgess's face.
Yeah.
I don't know.
All right, shall we end? Let's end this. Go on, Matt Burgess.
How many retweets would he need to get a lifetime supply of chicken nuggets?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, but there were so many of those.
No, this was the one. He said, or he wrote, "Yo, Wendy's, how many retweets for a year of free chicken nuggets?" That got 105,237 retweets and 44,686 likes, which is utterly meaningless, but means something.
Now, see, Wendy's are fantastic on Twitter.
Yeah, great Twitter game. So Wendy said he'd need to get 18 million, which is a little bit unrealistic, but Carter eventually got his nugs, and a charity got, I think it was about $100,000 donation to a good cause. 3-0, Matt Burgess. This is really impressive. You're never going to get this one. The Blade Runner sequel, Blade Runner 2049, finally launched this year. What fundamental plot point of the film do director Ridley Scott and star Harrison Ford still disagree about to this day? It's Matt Reynolds' turn to go first.
What? As someone that's watched neither Blade Runner, I think I'm particularly...
What?
Yeah.
Ah,
yeah.
Come on.
I think fundamental plot point, gravity. Ridley Scott says yes, gravity. Harrison Ford says no gravity in 2049.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's a great answer. Matt Burgess.
I also have not seen either Blade Runners.
Good Lord. What were you doing this
despite
year?
Despite having the opportunity to go to the IMAX and see the first one at a screening with Ridley Scott, which you passed my way, but I couldn't go to.
Steady, you don't trip up on the names you're dropping.
There we go. I'm going to say it's something to do with replicants.
Okay.
See, I watched the first one for the first time this year.
Great, great representation.
Is it whether Harrison Ford is a replicant?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's that. Matt Burgess, you get no points because that was further away. So yeah, it's whether Blade Runner Rick Deckard is a replicant. So Scott explains that the unicorn in Deckard's daydream, which Gaff knows about, proves he's a replicant, as Gaff knows the memory was implanted in his bionic brain.
None of that means anything to me.
No, but to the listeners, it will. So it's still a point of great contention. It's from the original film.
Two people in here haven't seen it.
If you haven't seen the original Blade Runner by
now,
you're
too late.
I'm really, really sorry. But that doesn't really ruin anything, and it's still very good.
Matt, do you know what happens in Titanic?
Not at all.
Sure, he's spoiled it.
Okay, final question, and then we can go and eat lots of mince pies. The UK started naming UK storms in 2015. Yes, the naming season starts each year in September, and we've already had Eileen, Brian, and Caroline. Who's next? Matt Burgess, you're first.
Oh, I wrote this story on our website.
Yes.
2 years ago and this year and this year. Yeah. No, last year and this year.
It's a great story.
Doris.
He's gone for Doris.
We might have Doris.
Yeah, I think, that rings a bell. It's very...
Derek.
Dylan.
Dylan.
Does it go male, female name?
Yes.
Yeah.
So why did Doris isn't...
I didn't think
Caroline?
Yeah.
You idiot. Come on.
You can tell he really paid attention to that story.
Yeah, it's a great story. So apparently Storm Dylan is going to wreak havoc across the United Kingdom over the festive season with mild winds and a small amount of rain.
Oh, isn't... I've definitely heard of Storm Doris. Is that like American?
Yeah, there's a separate naming system in the United States. This is just for the UK and the Republic of Ireland. There we go. We've learnt a lot. We've had some good times. We've had some bad times. To sing us out, here is no. We'll leave it at that for this year. I'm off for a couple of weeks, but these guys will be back bright and early in 2018 to bid you a... No, not you don't bid. To welcome you to the new year with our first podcast. But we've got a couple of weeks off and we'll be back in the new year. Have a wonderful holiday season, whatever you're doing, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
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 Now, Sean just fell over. It's atrocious.